This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Climate change.
Despite foot dragging and threats of obstruction from the arriving government of Donald Trump, the vast majority of countries in this world recognize that climate change is a huge threat to the human project. Their plans for a response are based on models that say we'll get a fairly predictable ramp of warming according to the amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. It's all under control, and nobody talks about the possibility of a genuine climate catastrophe this century. But what if the neat carbon logic is wrong? Could we have underestimated both the severity and the pace of climate change? New science has emerged. A headline in the UK's Independent newspaper, November 9th, reads, "Climate change may be escalating so fast it could be game over," scientists warn. The subhead says, quote, "New research suggests the Earth's climate could be more sensitive to greenhouse gases than thought, raising the specter of an apocalyptic side of bad, temperature rise of more than 7 degrees centigrade within a lifetime," end quote. The Independent's environment correspondent Ian Johnson is writing about a new study also published November 9th, 2016, but this time in the journal Science Advances. The subject is difficult. The paper isn't easy, and this interview may not be easy, but with stakes this high, I think you want to know. I've reached the lead author, Dr. Tobias Friedrich. He's a postdoc, researcher, and lecturer at the International Pacific Research Center. That's part of the University of Hawaii in Honolulu. Tobias Friedrich, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
Can we say from your research that the rate and amount of climate change may depend on the climate state where it begins?
Yes, that's absolutely right. One of our main results is that what we call climate sensitivity, so the temperature change you get for a certain change in Earth's energy balance, that this climate sensitivity is changing with the background climate. And it's actually, in fact, larger in a warmer climate. So you have a more sensitive Earth, if you like, in a warmer climate.
Well, now, scientists do talk about an ice house world and a greenhouse world. Where are we in that range of climate states?
So when we look at the past, our past climate on Earth has been characterized by changes from so-called glacial to so-called interglacial conditions. So from a world where large parts of the North America and Europe and Asia were covered by ice to phases where this was not, or where we only found ice, let's say, over Greenland. And currently we are in a so-called interglacial phase, so in a warm phase.
Okay, now I want to ask you about something that the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, often talks about, and that is the Representative Concentration Pathway 8.5. What does that mean?
Well, our future will be to a large degree determined by our greenhouse gas emissions because they cause global warming. The carbon dioxide emissions also cause ocean acidification. So in order to come up with future projections, we need information about future greenhouse gas emissions. And for these future projections of the greenhouse gas emissions, we have different scenarios. Basically, these scenarios depend on our smart or not so smart decision making. So we have scenarios in which humankind can actually change course and stabilize or even decrease emissions. And we have an emission scenario, the one that you are talking about, RCP 8.5, where the greenhouse gas emissions are increasing throughout the 21st century. And this is the one we are using for our study.
Well, it's my understanding if we don't manage to reduce emissions substantially or carbon capture somehow, the IPCC says Earth could warm anywhere between 2.6 degrees C, which is considered very dangerous, right up to 4.8 degrees C, and that's about 8.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's off the charts dangerous. And that is more or less what's projected for Pathway 8.5. So, Tobias Friedrich, what did your team do to investigate the assumptions behind that business-as-usual projection? What methods did you use?
Well, our team is not involved in determining the different future scenarios. I leave that to the experts for these kind of projections. Our research uses the most extreme scenario, the scenario with the highest greenhouse gas concentrations. So we see our projection more or less as an indicator of what could happen in terms of warming if we don't do anything about our greenhouse gas emissions.
So how did you investigate it? I mean, I gather you went back 784,000 years. How did you do it?
Well, the idea behind our study was to look at the past and see what can we learn from past climate change about future climate change. As I said, we've gone through these warm and cold phases in the past, so natural climate change. And the question is, what can we learn from that for the future? So in the past, this natural climate change over the last 800,000 years were, of course, driven by changes in Earth's energy balance. And so we went back and calculated the temperature evolution for the last approximately 800,000 years and also calculated the energy balance for that period of time. And from there, we were able to determine the sensitivity of Earth's climate. And once we basically had the sensitivity, we saw, oh, wow, Earth is actually more sensitive in warm phases. And then we applied this sensitivity to the future projection of greenhouse gas concentrations for the 21st century.
Well, I think that's kind of a big discovery, that it isn't just a stable formula, but it really depends on where you start from.
Absolutely. I have to say that we are not the first to come up with this idea that it is not just a number, the climate sensitivity, that it's in fact a function of the climate itself.
So if we start now in this hottest year ever, we're told, of 2016, how much could the Earth warm by 2100 in a bad case scenario?
So according to our results, and these results are a very good confirmation of what the IPCC has projected a couple of years ago, the temperature levels could rise to about 5.9 Celsius, this is about 10.5 Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial levels. So given that we are now approximately 1 degree Celsius above the pre-industrial level already, we are looking at another almost 5 degrees from now.
You're talking about a wrenching change, something beyond human experience or imagination, possibly within the lifetime of a very young person now. What does it mean? What would it look like?
Well, one of the problems basically for scientists or for people in general is that we don't really have an analog for what you just described, this type of warming. However, looking at the effects of warming, such as sea level rise and ice melt, coral bleaching, and also some other effects of CO2 like ocean acidification, I think it is very fair to say that the consequences could as well be really devastating. In particular for all of us, for humans that really depend on planet Earth to feed them.
Has the Earth been that hot before, 5 degrees C or even 7 degrees C hotter than now?
Well, definitely during the formation of Earth, we had phases when Earth was, of course, very, very hot on the early phases. And this is a question you get quite a bit as a climate scientist. The one thing that I always tell people is back then, yes, Earth was much warmer than today in the early phases. However, back then, we did not have 7 billion people on planet Earth.
We didn't have a lot of the creatures that we have today. Well, the British author Mark Lynas wrote a book called 6 Degrees, Our Future on a Hotter Planet. But he concluded there was little future for humans in a world 6 degrees warmer, and he was using science that's at least 10 years old. We found out a lot since then, including your research. Tobias Friedrich, is the climate now an existential threat, one that we may not survive?
You know, honestly, for me, it's not really a question of survival. And I don't know if that, let's say, the survival aspect should be our real focus. I'm not really sure we will, you know, earn a lot of support from people by simply scaring them, even if that scare is, let's say, very real and very well justified. You know, for me, the question really is, do we really want to compromise, you know, consciously and deliberately compromise the livelihood of our planet?
I've recently interviewed Professor David Anderson from Manchester, UK. He's just published about the way politicians and some scientists at the IPCC assume we will develop a massive technology to capture carbon from the atmosphere. Those assumptions, Anderson says, allows us to stall action to leave those painful carbon cuts until 2020 or 2030. What does your research tell us, if anything, about the timing of greenhouse gas controls?
Well, I think we definitely will have to develop techniques to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere in the future and to store the carbon. But clearly, we cannot use the hypothetical future development of these techniques to as a justification or apology to do absolutely nothing right now. Right now, we can cut emissions, so we should definitely do it. We cannot lean back and just have our children or grandchildren basically clean up our mess.
Radio EcoShock.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex with my guest scientist, Tobias Friedrich, from the University of Hawaii. We're looking at a very new research suggesting Earth may get hotter and faster than we thought. Tobias, your results will seem radical to some conservative scientists. What sort of reaction have you had in these early days following the publication of the paper?
Oh, I had really good reactions so far. I had a number of students, scientists, and journalists emailing me, and they were all really interested in our study. We had a bunch of news and media features, so I have to say I was very, very stoked, actually, about the reactions.
There are always uncertainties in science, though, especially when we explore the deep past or try to project the future. How certain are you of these results, and what remains to be done to see whether dangerous climate sensitivity is real?
You know, there will always be uncertainties, as you just said, and for our study, we really try to identify all the effects of uncertainties as much as possible. And in the end, you know, we come up with a certain range of climate sensitivity, not just a number. We come up with a certain range of projected global warming. And personally, I think from the perspective of communicating science, it is absolutely necessary to tell people about these uncertainties because that draws a more comprehensive picture of the challenges of climate science. There are uncertainties. This is part of our science. You know, but irrespective of these uncertainties, I think the main message always has to be that the consequences of human-induced greenhouse gas emissions could be devastating with respect to sea level rise, ice melt, coral bleaching, ocean acidification. So what I normally tell my students when they ask about all these things is I tell them, you know, when you know your lifestyle will result in some sort of cancer, but maybe you don't know the cancer exactly, what do you do? Do you really wait to kind of find out until you know exactly how bad it's going to be, or do you start changing your lifestyle right away?
On another topic, a couple of years ago, I interviewed one of Canada's top climate scientists, Dr. Andrew Weaver. He suggested we don't need more science. We know too much already, and we act too little, and so he ran for the Green Party and was elected. Your new paper makes me feel a bit the same. If we know fossil fuel powered civilization leads to destruction by climate change, do we need more science?
Well, we definitely need more action, that's for sure. I think we also absolutely need more science. You know, we have more and more people on this planet recognizing the potentially devastating effects of climate change. And all these people now begin to ask, well, what's happening or what will happen in my front yard? So, for example, here, people in Hawaii, they learned about coral bleaching as a consequence of climate change. So they now want to find out, will there still be corals in 30 years from now here in Hawaii? Then when you look, for example, at the Pacific Northwest, the oyster hatcheries, they have had a lot of trouble because of ocean acidification, and they want to know how ocean acidification in the future will affect their hatcheries, their local coast. And then when you look at, say, droughts and the effects of droughts and the evolution of droughts under climate change, the farmers in the United States and other countries, they definitely want to know what the projections are for, let's say, a more regional scale. So there's a lot of ways in which climate change or climate research can actually help people to cope with climate change. So, yeah, I definitely believe we need climate research in the future as much as we need to take action right now.
Well, now we know more about climate sensitivity. Does the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change need to change the projections they offer politicians at meetings like COP22 in Marrakesh?
Well, I see our results that overlap with the upper range of what the IPCC is projecting. I see our results mainly as an independent confirmation of their projections. So I don't think they need to change their projections, and the IPCC has, let's say, updated their projections in the past, and then I'm sure they will do so in the future. And our results, I think, are, let's say, an independent confirmation of what they have projected 3 years ago.
I noticed one of your co-authors is Andrei Ganapolsky from the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. That's in Germany. And so often I find that institute is on the cutting edge of climate research. Why do you think that is, Tobias? Is it government support, a long history of German science, or what?
Well, the climate, if you like, the climate for climate research has probably been a little more welcoming in Germany compared to, for example, the United States under the Bush administration. However, I have to say, talking to my colleagues in Germany, many of them are actually struggling with, you know, short-term funding and with actually seeing a long-term perspective in science. And I know this can be very difficult, actually, when you have bills to pay and when you have a family to feed.
We're all feeling a little discouraged, or at least I am, by the election of Donald Trump in America. He's just appointed the climate confuser, I call him, some call him a denier, Myron Ebel, to redirect the Environmental Protection Agency. Tobias Friedrich, do you follow politics? And if so, what do you think?
Well, I definitely follow politics. And, you know, what I think is to protect the people from harm. This is one of the major reasons why, well, governments were instituted among men. And I truly believe that people who simply ignore the threats of climate change do not deserve to be our leaders. Yeah, I mean, climate change could have devastating effect, as I said, not only for our environment, but also for our food supply and for our economy. And the government, it's the government's job to protect their people from this type of harm.
And on a personal level, I do sometimes feel a little sick about our position in time. My grandson may live through a kind of apocalypse, or at least a very great change. Now, you've just returned from a journey into the deep past, and the news doesn't look good there. How do you handle this knowledge yourself on a personal level?
Well, I have to say that sometimes it can be a little discouraging to really look into these projections of global warming, of sea level rise, of ocean acidification. It can definitely be a little bit discouraging, but, you know, I deeply believe that we do not have the right to give up. You know, every generation probably has its own challenges, like World War II or the Cold War, and we have the challenge of climate change, and we have to basically tackle this challenge.
We've been talking about the paper Nonlinear Climate Sensitivity and Its Implications for Future Greenhouse Warming. It's newly published in the journal Science Advances. The paper is available to the public as a free full text. I'll put links to that and other science we've talked about in my show blog at ecoshock.info. I expect reverberations from this paper will happen for some time to come, and it may be a bit of a delay before the general public understands it. Our guide has been the lead author of the paper, Dr. Tobias Friedrich. He's a postdoctoral fellow, researcher, and lecturer at the University of Hawaii School of Ocean and Earth Science and Technology, and specifically of the International Pacific Research Center in Honolulu. Tobias, thank you so much for your work and for talking with us on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.